Welcome to the Green Front. I am Betsy Rosenberg, joined by my favorite co-host and Republican and climate convert. I'm speaking of none other than D.R. Tucker. We have a fabulous show lined up for you, just lined it all up. Today we have Thomas Mann up first. You're going to not want to miss this interview. He is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute and author of a new book called It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism. And we are also going to get a live report from the scene of the Heartland Institute's diluted, watered-down, anemic conference. A lot fewer people, a lot less hype, well, maybe as much hype, but a lot less support coming in financially and otherwise for the Heartland Institute. We'll speak with Brad Johnson, who is the campaign director for Forecast the Facts, one of our new favorite groups. Also, find out what's going on with Greenpeace. They have a big protest underway. It's aimed at Kentucky Fried Chicken. Apparently, it's not so much what's in the chicken, although that's probably another story. It's what's in the packaging. Apparently, they're using cardboard made from pulp from, forests that should not be cut down for packaging, let's say. Forests that should be standing there for eternity. And we'll find out from Rolf Sklar what that campaign is all about. D.R. Tucker, thanks for joining me, and I hope we have Thomas Mann on the line.
You do indeed. Happy to be with you.
Fabulous.
Yes, how are you doing?
Thank you so much for your work and for joining us on short notice. We know you have to catch a train near the bottom of the hour, so we moved you up, and you are so important in terms of your message right now, which is what is causing Congress to go off the rails. And sort of like the movie and the sequel, Who Killed the Electric Car? It seems like after a lot of investigation, who killed cooperation in Congress, you might say, mostly it's the Republicans.
Indeed, one of the problems in Washington among nonpartisan or bipartisan groups and much of the press, people at think tanks and the like, is to talk about polarization, but to assume both parties are equally indicted in these developments. It has a way of producing he says, she says, and they're all implicated, they're all corrupt, they're all the cause of our problems. It has a way of demobilizing the public and disarming them from their responsibility to rein in the insurgent outliers, to kind of punish the parties and candidates that go off the tracks, because it's never acknowledged. Well, we're like the little boy who points out the emperor wears no clothes. The fact is, the Republican Party has gone off the rails. They become more ideologically extreme. They really want to renegotiate a century's worth of economic and social policy. They have no interest in compromise. They are standing on principle. They oftentimes make up their own facts and have a kind of disdain for evidence and science. And perhaps as important as anything else, they simply don't accept the legitimacy of the opposition, whether in the form of President Obama or of the Democratic Party. And all of that has ground our system really to a halt at best. An aggressively parliamentary-like opposition party using the filibuster and other means to frustrate action on important policy problems. That's our conclusion, and we're taking some heat, but a lot more folks who are saying, "Wow, I'm glad someone finally said it."
When exactly did this hyper-partisanship on the right start? Because Charles Pierce of Esquire magazine has argued that the GOP has always been off the partisan rails, going all the way back to the Joe McCarthy era. But when did this sort of intensity really, really begin?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there have been sharply ideological movements within the Republican Party at times. Democrats have had their share as well. But what's happened is that these ideas, which once were on the fringe of the Republican Party, have been embraced by the establishment. Ideas from denying the existence of climate change to signing tax pledges that says under no circumstances ever will we raise taxes, and we will avail ourselves of every opportunity and use every weapon to cut taxes, whatever the implications for deficits and debt, and we will be prepared to hold hostage the good faith and credit of the country by threatening not to raise the debt ceiling. It was done once last year, and it had very negative effects on the public and for the economy. And now Speaker Boehner has pulled that threat out once again. Last year, he was telling his new members that they had a responsibility to pass the debt ceiling, and we can't play politics with it, but he was run over. Now he's decided the only way to deal with his party is to get out in front of them and lead the charge with the debt ceiling.
And we are concerned with the debt ceiling, but we're obsessed here on the green front with climate change,
right,
and thinking about the atmospheric ceiling in terms of CO2 getting trapped and causing all kinds of ecological havoc. Let's just focus on that for a few minutes. How outrageous is it that these people have denied science, ignored 98.5% of the world's climate scientists, and all four of the Republican candidates for president saying they don't believe in climate change, even though Mitt Romney, of course, used to, and it's not the kind of topic that you can really change your mind on, really, is it?
Look at the change on this from John McCain to Mitt Romney as the Republican Party standard bearer. You know what it is? There are now a set of doctrines. They take the form of the scripture of the Republican Party, and if you dare to sort of violate or reject that, you are ostracized. You are challenged in Republican primary elections. There simply is no room to operate. We saw that close and up front in 2009 as the House was working on a climate change bill, a cap and trade bill, Energy and Commerce Committee. There were some younger Republicans, even freshmen who are not Tea Partiers, who actually believed in climate change and worked in committee with the majority on it, but they were told in no uncertain terms they had no future in the House or in the Republican Party if they stuck with it. So there was not a single vote on the Republican side amongst them in support of moving this along. It's so depressing because it reflects a broader rejection of the whole idea of science, of evidence. It's a denial of the very thing that has helped make the country great, that is the scientific research and technology, innovation, and in a whole range of areas that have served the country's economy and frankly environment very well. But now we have one of our two major parties in absolute denial about this.
It is just it's very, very sad. And you mentioned the sort of a Republican rejection of cap and trade. One of the arguments I often make with some of my so-called skeptic friends is that, you know, Reagan, according to thinkprogress.org, actually Daniel Weiss of Center for American Progress, Reagan utilized cap and trade to phase out the use of lead in gasoline, and George H.W. Bush signed cap and trade into law in the 1990 Clean Air Act, and in fact, Republicans such as then Congressman James Inhofe of Oklahoma voted for the 1990 Clean Air Act containing cap and trade. So how did it become anti-capitalism and Marxism in 20 years?
Isn't that amazing? It I mean, it was, as you correctly point out, a kind of a conservative idea to use market mechanisms to achieve the objectives that were widely recognized as important to the well-being, to the future existence of the country and the entire globe. But nowadays, Ronald Reagan and both President Bushes would have no chance of succeeding in the Republican Party because they've moved so far. I could repeat that example on health care where of course Obama thought by embracing some previous Republican alternatives on health care that would bring the party into negotiations, but they simply denied they ever supported them and called it socialism. This is what we're really up against. You can repeat this on issue after issue. I mean, they're ideological differences, but it's this sort of strategic opposition to anything now being pursued by the other party, even if it's ideas and policies that they themselves only a couple of years ago had advanced. It is really destructive of the whole notion of collaboration, of negotiation, of compromise, which the framers saw as the only way to properly represent a highly diverse nation through this system of separation of powers. But now it doesn't work at all because the other party is simply has refused to engage in any such action. So ironically, we have a parliamentary-like opposition party, but operating not in a parliamentary system where the majority can rule and then be held accountable, but instead in our system where tools like the Senate filibuster are available to deny the majority the opportunity to deliver on its electoral promises.
Well, we were hoping to get Norm Ornstein on, your co-author, as well. He is, of course, a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, a group we talk about a lot on the Green Front, and not in a favorable way because of their incredible conspiracy in terms of perpetuating the ridiculous belief that climate change doesn't exist, funded by the Koch brothers. I wish we had him here, but since you know him well, obviously, and writing this book together, what would you say that he would say about, in particular, the continual, you know, denial of climate reality? And, you know, that should really go beyond politics. We're talking about planetary
character. Exactly. He would, as I have, and has, I've heard him many times say that's completely crazy. You can have an argument about how you go about dealing with the problem and the efficacy of various approaches, but to deny its existence, the any man-made influence on global warming and climate change is not a considered judgment. It is a leap of faith. So no room between us on that fundamental point.
Glad to hear that. We know you have to go. Do you have time for one more question?
Sure.
Go ahead, DR. Your turn.
Yes. Do you see this ever reversing? Do you see this ever healing? Do you ever see us getting to the point where the partisanship diminishes, or is it going to be a situation where the only thing that causes it to diminish is money? And the reason why I bring this up is that I was watching this conference about the decline of moderate republicanism, in which Stephen Hayward of American Enterprise Institute noted that the only way to sort of moderate the Republican Party is if a billionaire like Michael Bloomberg decides to run his own version of Karl Rove's group or his own version of Americans for Prosperity to back financially moderate Republicans. Do you think that's the only salvation?
Well, that's one way of having influence. Half of our book, let me say, it's even worse than it looks, is devoted to how to fix it and what what bromides to avoid and then how to really get into it. And money is certainly an important element of it, but so too are changes in the institutional rules of the game in Congress. We have ideas for enlarging the electorate that we think will change in ways of promoting a return to a public square. But ultimately, the only way the Republican Party will come back into the mainstream of American politics and public life is to take a thrashing at the polls, which would finally provide others, and there are many Republicans out there who've been writing to us and saying, you've got it right. We've got real problems in our party. But the only way that will change is if their current positions and strategies are rejected by the public, and they begin to rethink what they are doing and what they are about.
Thomas Mann, thank you so much. I hope to have you back on the show. You're a wonderful resource, senior fellow at the Brookings Institute and co-author of the book, It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism. We'll let you go catch your train, and we will continue with that theme, It's Even Worse.